Hello, Daryl. How are we doing tonight?
What's going on, Jonathan?
Well, I've had quite the day. I was looking for my... Well, so we had the hiring of the Broncos with Sean Payton, and I was talking about Kevin James being the hiring of the Sean Payton role in the awful Saints Netflix movie. And I don't know if I should feel insulted by this or not. You tell me. Michael Bohm running the board tonight said that my celebrity comp, and we had some good ones, by the way. Some people said like Neil Patrick Harris, which isn't accurate at all, but you know what? It's nice. It's sweet. Go ahead, Michael. Tell him the person that you went ahead and said that you think I look like.
Well, to be fair, off the record or off the air, I did give you an amended actor.
An amended one, which is better. And you can say that one maybe a little bit later on as well. But the first, your gut reaction. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Paul Giamatti.
Bald, fat Paul Giamatti. It ain't great, Daryl. It ain't great, man.
Taller version in 20 years. Yes, I can see it. I can see it.
Oh, man. That's not pretty. All right, Michael.
Hey, mine's Jim Carrey.
Jim Carrey's a beloved figure and not a bad-looking guy.
And I'm beloved and not a bad-looking guy. What's your point?
No, I agree. That's a good comp for you.
I said that. I tried saying it with a straight face, but I couldn't.
It's a good comp for you. Let me see Jim Carrey's dating profile. His dating history. You know, our buddies Nick and Dustin in the afternoon went through Derek Jeter's dating history earlier in the day.
Well, there's a reason he's the captain.
Wow. I mean, he is. He's dated everybody and anybody, basically.
He definitely nailed the starting nine, no pun intended.
Jim Carrey's dated Renee Zellweger and Jenny McCarthy. That's pretty good. Paul Giamatti, I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to say who he's dated, but we all know what I'm thinking when I say who he's dated, okay? It's not even a person. All right, 216-578-1182. No, I just bail out of that. Daryl Ryder joining us here on 92.3 The Fan. Daryl, we had a call last segment, and the caller said Cavs shot 27% from three-point land. Heat shot 45% from three-point land. That's your ball game. But he wanted you to discuss that. What are your thoughts when you have the three-point discrepancy the way that it was tonight?
The ball game was in the first and fourth quarters. Miami started out 2-11 from the field. Cavaliers couldn't really create any distance right out of the gate. And then in the fourth quarter, to open it up, 4 minutes, 59 seconds before the Heat were able to score, Cavaliers did nothing with that. They only got 4 points. That's the ball game there. Yes, certainly when you look at the box score and you see Cavs made six more field goals than the Heat did, you look at the three-point percentages there. Miami came in as one of the worst three-point shooting teams in the league. I don't know what it is with the Cavaliers on the perimeter lately, but they don't tend to defend the line very well. But the game was lost when they were unable to turn good quality defense into offense.
Do you have any problem with Evan Mobley taking that late three? I had issues with it.
I think I have more of a problem of them letting like 23 seconds run off a clock before they decide to do anything defensively in the final minute. I have issues with the empty possessions down the stretch. I mean, honestly, the basketball guards kind of smiled on him a little bit with Butler missing that free throw with less than 10 seconds to play, which gave Donovan Mitchell an opportunity at least to get a potential tying three-point shot off. It is starting to become a common theme with this team late in games, and I realize they are young. They are learning. That was a little bit of a theme talking to guys at the podium and in the locker room after this one. Jared Allen and Donovan Mitchell both said, at some point we have to get past the learning phase. We have to stop saying that we're learning. Mitchell emphasized, hey, this guy's not falling. We're still in great shape. But the reality is, and at some point, these lessons need to turn into wins. And we're not seeing a lot of that late in games. I think they're 4-7 this season in games decided by 3 or fewer points.
Now, we played JB after the game, and JB sounded one way. You're saying the guys in the locker room, what was their vibe like?
Yeah, I mean, certainly disappointment, but again, they want to emphasize, you know, clearly they're not happy that they lost this game, right? Going into it, they were talking about, hey, this is, you know, potential playoff preview type thing. And they didn't get it done. But, you know, they're trying not to overreact, which I think is very good. Like, that's going to be our job, right? That's my job. That's your job. That's, you know, our listeners' job. So to overreact, you look at it as 1 of 82, but I, in the short time that I've jumped back on covering this team and have really been paying a lot of attention to them, the fourth quarter execution is a theme. They've got to find a way to get that cleaned up, because if they don't, even if they make the playoffs, their stay in the postseason is going to be very, very short, because you have to execute late in ball games to advance in the months of late April and May.
Yeah, which is weird, Daryl, because they were really good at that early in the season. It felt like you were waiting for the fourth quarter, and then all of a sudden, by snap of the fingers, they would just start playing really well. And then you're right. They've been so maddeningly inconsistent over this 2.5, 3-week stretch. You said it's up to us to get mad about these type of things if we choose to. Are you going to get upset by it, or is this one of those, Donovan's coming back, he didn't have a great game, you lost by 3, let's not make a big deal out of it?
Yeah, they've got a long way to go. I just put it this way. If I were to put myself in the Cavaliers' shoes, I would be more mad at the loss to Golden State more so than this one.
Of course.
Miami's a good team. They've been there. They've done that. They showed that tonight, right? Even though the Cavaliers were in front of them in the standings, but, you know, they're going to start getting a taste of physical basketball. You're not going to score 125 points a night. Defense is going to carry you. And again, my concern with this team, when I look at tonight's game, they had stretches of really good defense and they did absolutely nothing with that on the offensive end. And again, I go back to those first 5 minutes of the fourth quarter. We can sit here and nitpick every possession in the final 90 seconds. But the bottom line is, Jonathan, should have never come down to that. Should have never come down to that.
Yeah.
The game should have been over halfway through the fourth quarter, because they played really well on the defensive end. But on the offensive end, they couldn't get shots to fall, or they, you know, weren't running the right sets, or just whatever the issues were on the offensive end of the floor in those stretches. That's what ultimately cost them the game.
Let me ask you an NFL question here. If the Browns are in the same spot as the Broncos next year, would you give up draft picks for a head coach? I heard you earlier in the week. You were in the less need F those picks camp.
Yeah, well, first round pick is a little different conversation, though.
Let's have it. Let's have that conversation then, because you might be in a very similar situation to what the Broncos are this offseason, next offseason.
You got to tell me who the coach is. I mean, like, it's a case-by-case basis. I'm not ducking the question, but it's a case-by-case basis. Now, you're talking to someone that throughout the month of December, I was like, hey, if I'm the Browns, I back-channel some conversations with Sean Payton's people to see if there's any interest there, just because I was not enamored with the job that Kevin Stefanski was doing.
Well, now that you've seen the return, then, would that have been enough, or would you have been running away from Sean Payton if that got back as the compensation?
I'm not giving up a first round pick for a coach, because if I'm looking for a coach, it's one of two things. I'm looking for a guy that's going to take me to the quote unquote next level, right? To escape mediocrity, or I'm in a rebuild type of a situation. And if you're in a rebuild type of situation, you need first round picks. So, I don't like giving up first round picks for head coaches.
Do you feel like trades involving coaches are going to be more of a theme moving forward, or is this just a one-off?
No, this is a rare occasion.
Because I know we have Bruce Arians a couple years ago. You got to go a little bit further back than that to get anyone in the high def television era. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's a few and far between. But I could see where a team like the Saints.
I'm trying to remember if John Gruden was traded. I think he was.
Sean Payton, Bruce Arians, Herm Edwards sandwiched in between John Gruden as well.
Bill Belichick was traded.
Yes,
remember
but
that?
Again, I wanted the high-def era here. We could talk about Holmgren, too, and Bill Parcells and all these guys, but, you know, I the way I wouldn't throw out stats from 1999, same way I won't throw out trading coaches from 1999 either.
Okay. Well, I mean, it is a rare occurrence, but it does happen.
And no, it is, but that's why I'm fascinated by it. You know, I look around because, again, in recent years – you know, Arians was a swap of a sixth and a seventh round pick. Yeah. Herm Edwards was a fourth round pick. It's not like they were high prices. Now, Gruden was a little bit higher. I do
Payton,
wonder. Yeah,
Payton giving up a first round pick, that's a pretty steep price.
It's a pretty steep price. And if you're a smart NFL team, maybe you look at it from that way. Like, okay, I can get things in return.
Look, I called the Urban Meyer situation. I nailed that one, and I'm going to nail this one. I don't know that that's going to pay dividends. It's a splash now for that ownership group in Denver. They got a lot to learn about the National Football League. I think that their problems go a lot deeper than a coach. And I mean, look, we'll see it. We're about to find out if Sean Payton can fix Russell Wilson.
It's their Hail Mary. That's what they did.
Because Russell Wilson needs fixed, quite frankly.
I've been saying since his last year in Seattle, I thought he was done.
It's going to be. I'm not straddling the fence here, but this is either going to pay massive dividends for the Broncos, and the fact that Russell Wilson is going to return to that guy that we saw in Seattle because of Sean Payton's creativity and that, or it's just going to be an epic disaster.
And look, as
a Saints, I love Sean Payton. Sean Payton will forever and ever hold a special place, right, for winning that Super Bowl, but. It could have gotten more out of some of those teams. There were many a postseason where it was like, you know, didn't get it done, right?
Yeah.
We got hosed by the officials a couple of times in some playoff games, but like they should have had more than one ring down there in New Orleans. But we got the one in the case. But yeah, I do see a scenario where that can go full time. That has the potential to go full Titanic for the Denver Broncos and go very bad.
If I did impressions, I'd give you an alrighty then, right there. But I don't do impressions, so I'll have to say sayonara.
You don't have to worry about your dating life anymore. You have a lovely bride. As long as you take her on plenty of dates for the rest of your life, you will not have to be worrying
about.
Trying
to make me feel better about you're making me feel better about the Paul Giamatti comp. Is that what you're trying to do? You're trying to make me feel better about how bald and fat is my future.
I think my kick save went wide, but I tried.
Thank you, Daryl. I'll talk to you tomorrow night.
You bet.
All right. Good stuff with Daryl right there.